Do your youngsters ever ask you, what did you do before television was invented? Now, sometimes it's hard to answer that question in a way that they'll understand. We read, and we played out in the fresh air a lot more, or at least that's what we tell the kids. But maybe there's another answer.
KWVA, Eugene.
You suckers. Suckers.
Well, you're listening to KWVA, Eugene. It's time for Anarchy Radio right now. We're in the studio with Kath, and the number is 541-346-0645, and we will be on the air in just a couple of minutes. Here's some John Coltrane to get you in the mood.
Radio, April 21st. Kathleen is here.
Here I am from Portland, Oregon.
Super. You seem to have brought the rain. It's
no,
starting.
Not oh? Me. You're chasing me home with it.
Oh, yeah. Maybe it's dry up there. Probably not. We're going to have, most likely, a call from Layla Abdel Rahim.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. She's got her new book, Children's Literature, Domestication and Social Foundation, Narratives of Civilization and Wilderness. And you so kindly lent me your copy. I've been reading it since I left, and it's pretty good read. I'm hoping to hear from her.
Yeah, looking forward to that. Probably done us up about now, pretty soon. You know, for a local interest thing here, people in the Eugene, Oregon area, there is really a fine show at the Jordan Schnitzer Museum of Art here on the University of Oregon campus. Rick Bartow, we were both going through it just a couple of hours ago. I'm his work just blows me away.
It's so strong. It's really powerful. I think even with Layla calling to talk about her book, to think of his imagery and the way he combines kind of human and animal in a very vibrant, colorful, strong images.
Very passionate. Yeah, I think of I actually hate Warhol and the other pop art people. And Jordan Schnitzer, who got the museum named after him, he's got a lot of money. He's got a great big Warhol collection. He's quite the
collector. Is that right? I didn't know he was. That's Jordan?
Yeah, Jordan Schnitzer.
Oh, okay.
So they roll that out from time to time. And to me, it's someone like Rick Bartow. His work is just the opposite to me. The passion, you got this vapid, shallow Warhol stuff. I just can't stand it. And this,
vapid,
man,
shallow, superficial. And this is like depth and
powerful.
Powerful. Makes you stop it, you know, stop where you're at and look.
It's what I like best about what I gravitate to in terms of abstract expressionism. They lived and died that stuff. It wasn't this whatever sells, you know, lightweight stuff. You see this guy in the works, right?
You see it, you feel it in his marks. He puts his stuff directly on the wall and just like fights the wall to get that image to come out of the canvas. And I really do think you can feel it. You know, you feel it in the marks and in the color.
Yeah, agreed. So if you get a chance, it's going to be here for a while. They had a big opening over the weekend.
Yeah, I think it's here till May.
Mm-hmm. All right. Just some news. The Bay Area Anarchist Book Fair used to be called the San Francisco Anarchist Book Fair this next weekend. And our friend Dane will be down there basically tabling for Fifth Estate. And Rydra of good old Free Radical Radio is going to be tabling with Black and Green Review. They probably have more stuff than just those. But
so where are they holding that? Is that by Golden Gate again? Or
no, it's been in the East Bay. They had it at this place last year. I can't think of it. When I decided I wasn't going to make it, I haven't paid attention. But yeah, that's coming up next weekend.
Another question, will they do that bastard conference with it?
I don't know. You know, I was wondering about that this morning. There's been nothing at Anarchist News. So
yeah, I hadn't seen anything.
They usually have some sort of 9 days of anarchy and with the Bay Area students of bastard. I can't think of the words.
Yeah.
So, we do have Layla.
Oh, we have, hello?
Yes, we do. Well, just a second. I gotta press the button.
We're so excited. We can't wait.
What?
She's at the door.
Let's try that.
The doorbell.
Layla, are you there?
We may have lost her.
Huh.
Whoa.
Yeah, something happened.
I think she'll try again.
There we go.
Yeah, that's good to know. She's, we're in the proper time zone. It's 3 hours later there. Yeah, we'll be getting on with that. Of course, maybe everybody knows 5 years ago this week, the Deepwater disaster in the Gulf of Mexico is also 20 years ago.
Hi, this is Carly.
I think she's already back. I'll just shelve that for now and hope we don't cut her
shelve
off again.
Shelve it. Get it? Good pun.
Oh, yes. I was going to refer to another anniversary, a 20-year anniversary. And
okay. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Yay.
Good work, Carl.
Hello, Layla.
Hello, Catherine.
Yes, it's been a while.
Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi, John. Well, good to hear you. I can't see you. It feels strange through all those pixels on my screen. But it's familiar voices. I'm glad to hear you.
Yeah.
It's nice to hear your voice. It's been very, I took off with the book you've just published, or Rutledge has published.
Yes, I heard.
Ah.
The verdict.
Oh, the verdict. The verdict. I would definitely say recommended reading. Let me tell the listeners a bit about it, and then you kick in. It's the title of the book, Children's Literature, Domestication, and Social Foundation, Narratives of Civilization and Wilderness, And it's Rutledge Press, which I believe is an academic press. Some of your terminology, I'm going to ask you to expound on just basically your whole habitus, body, hexus, and doxa as it applies to the work. So I'll let you think about that. Basically, the book's a study of children's literature as knowledge, culture, and social foundation. And it investigates civilized narrative, ordering our experiences. Layla takes a look at some books, children's books. Winnie the Pooh, Well Known to Me by A.A. Milne. A Russian author, Nikolai Nosov, The Adventures of Duno and Friends. And I don't know if that pronunciation is right. And then the Tove Jansson Moomin books, which my understanding that was like written in the 40s, from Swedish author.
Yes, Swedish minority in Finland.
Finland.
Finland. Yes, and she started the first book, the first sort of story novella, was during World War II, and then it kind of spanned all through the 70s. Until then, she was also an artist, and she moved on to so-called adult literature and art. I found actually, in terms of if there is any hope to telling stories, they are with the movement and with Tove Jansson's ability to capture chaos and wilderness and all its splendor.
We were sort of talking about it as if it's in a magical hunter-gatherer vein, might be one way to capture some of that too, do you think?
Yes, and even though it's it was sort of catered, to use the consumerist vocabulary for children, the topics are very real and anthropological in that sense. That there are different gatherer societies and hunter societies, and eruptions of civilization, and the kind of general issues of just living in a world that is unpredictable and yet very lovable and loving,
mm-hmm.
if we approach it with the respect it deserves for all its diversity. And so in this respect, it's really, it's almost very scientific and very adult and really uncategorizable in a sense.
I really enjoyed the way you used actual quotes from the book. I thought, it really made the point, and it was almost poetic, the vision I would get reading, in terms of understanding a viewpoint of wilderness and how beings exist as beings in the present. And I thought you really contrasted that well, especially with the other book, the Duno book.
Yes, and Duno, to touch on your first question regarding the vocabulary of habitus and body hexus. Duno is sort of my habitus, my body, ingrained in my body hexus, in the sense that it's really my native culture. I mean, this is the first book I read, and it stayed with me. And it's very interesting that as an adult, now feeling more like, say, snufking in the moving book, I'm capable of looking back at my own culture, at my own self, and seeing all the problems, that domestication and accepting a compromise that civilization poses. And so it's also very dear to me in the sense that there are a lot of issues of, like, it starts with a gatherer society, and it's like completely a frugivore, they pick mushrooms and fruits, mostly berries, in the woods in Little Mice in an imaginary flower town surrounded by forests. But north of accept civilization and kind of evolution towards communism as inevitable and capitalism as sort of an illness that can be overcome. And nonetheless, I find that problematic, that, you know, even communism as self-organized utopia that left the dream of, you find already in those books, it's a trilogy, so it's three books, that it's fraught with economic chaos, exploitation, and possibilities of war in a way, because, well, they don't go to war, but there's crime, there's violence in cities that accept pollution. And yes, the author seems to embrace that as a natural kind of path for humanity. And so, kind of realizing that, maybe also in contrast, we need a pool. We need a pool is something that was. To me, always alien in a way, like foreign, and I could easily see the problem. I could never understand the humor as a child, and as an adult, going back and rereading it, I could then pinpoint why I could not find it funny, laughing at Eeyore or, you know, chasing out the immigrants and all the medical issues. And so it's possible to overcome these stories, but at the same time, to go back to the vocabulary of habitus, they become ingrained. Habitus is Bourdieu's term of solutions that our ancestors have found a formula to apply to solve problems. So it's kind of an economy of effort, kind of... The lazy way out.
Uh-huh.
In chaos, you tune into the problem, and yes, you have experience of solving similar problems, but you always have to be on check, on guard, that you have to be creative, because chaos is never the same. There is a pattern, but there's also change. There's also entropy that goes, you know, further and further towards the unfeasible. The organized within the disorganized. And but in civilization, you kind of have this pattern, or, you know, cultures in general. In civilization, they become ingrained and kind of alienated. They become, they're giving to us a formula from authority. But, say, like in traditional society, nonetheless transmitted from generation to generation. Same recipe, and it becomes an easy kind of way out, not to think and to apply the same formula, and in a monocultural environment that is controlled by outside forces, organisms or beings, they end up falling in despair that they cannot really create any new solutions, and they're forced to kind of repeat the same pattern. And body hexes is what becomes our composure, kind of physical carry of this package. And so Bourdieu then explains, and then there's, of course, other elements, ideology, and also the unknown to us, the kind of the taken for granted knowledge that we don't speak of. We don't know that we know it.
That's the doxa, right?
The doxa.
The doxa, right. Well, I thought you did bring up two. I wanted to wonder if you know this author, Leonard Shillane. He wrote a book, probably in the 90s, about art and physics. And then he wrote one, I believe the title was something about the goddess and the alphabet or something, but it was looking at the difference in narratives between oral and written, and pretty much he, you know, attributes patriarchy and misogyny being aligned with written traditions, and the spoken word and the handed down traditions is just being a narrative that more coincides with what you're saying, the chaos and the, you know, the wild civilization, you know.
Yes, of course. And also, well, as you probably noticed in the first part where I really look at how we get domesticated, you know, John's invaluable contribution, you know, your critique on language is kind of a real important kind of dot over the I that other anthropologists like Goody and Ong I discuss. You know, they pinpoint the problem, say, of literacy and the effect of literacy on the brain and the fact that it's a result like it, literacy is born of necessity to record what we owe and kind of relationships of death, which then become, to use Bourdieu's analysis, become ingrained in us. You know, so literacy is memorizing these relationships, reenacting them, and constantly being reminded, like it becomes sort of in us, but at the same time externalized. And nonetheless, they, like most of the scientists, anthropologists, fiction authors, you know, filmmakers, they still succumb to this notion that, well, now we're here, and that's how it's going to be. It's like, well, there is a problem. Yes, it's a result of hierarchy and domination. And then, of course, again, the problem of gender comes with, like, it becomes cemented or structured with agriculture revolution. But it's born prior to that in the desire to become a predator, to change our nature from being apes, enjoying our berries and nuts, hanging all day on trees, to violence, exploitation and domination and subjugation of the whole world and each other, to a mythical need and desire. And that's the problem that becomes then kind of restated in all the literature that I look at, which is scientific, anthropological.
I think you underlined so wonderfully that very fatalism. Well, here it is, you know, we can't do anything. It's this is it, and it does no good to, even though we know all the aspects, we do. We know the aspects and the impacts, but all that just is disregarded, right? And you're not at home with that, shall we say.
No, and the book basically looks at how, in a way, children's literature here is, and I actually stated this in the introduction, it's what anthropologists like to call, and I hate that term, field informant. But in a way, it is a field informant in the sense that it's through that, our first encounter with civilization is, of course, with the way we are birthed and parented, and that's like I discussed in my first book. And then the stories that, of course, it's the adults who channel the narrative through these sort of that appear to be simple tales. And again, like I show with Winnie the Pooh, it's not simple at all. It's very problematic. It's problematic in the sense that it teaches us to integrate within our body axis this alienation and this laughter at somebody who is depressed, like Eeyore, or somebody who is different. You know, they have a different child rearing culture, like Kanga and Roo, or Tigger, the immigrant. And, you know, those fake polite notions are very real, and yet children, you know, in the films that are shown, like Up, you know, it keeps reiterating that this real suffering is something you have to accept. You have to laugh off, brush off, or accept as even romantic. You know, in the film Up, the main character dies. Her husband takes her dream and sends her house on top of the mountains that she dreamt to conquer. But she worked all her life, you know, for civilization that made it impossible for her to live that dream. And yet, then the audience finds it romantic and appeasing. And that is the problem. That is one of the problems, one of the ways in which civilization then lulls us. But then, of course, it's not enough, because then you have to actually structure these realities and make them real, reify them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So will you, Layla, will you be doing any talking, presenting this book on a book tour?
If I'm invited, I'll be delighted. So far, I started working on my third book.
Oh.
Wonderful news.
Yes.
So everybody listening, keep that in mind. That would be wonderful to get you in person in wherever it might be.
Yes, I would be delighted.
It would be good. And, you know, I would like to see people, especially within, like when you were last in Portland, within educational circles and people involved in rearing children and education. You know, I think it's a very insightful book. And like I said, the way you use the stories is just, there's a poetic quality to it. It's, you know, it appeals it on a... in a non-verbal way.
And that is especially with Tove Jansson. The way, I mean, it's contagious, that love she has for chaos. And chaos is poetic in its own way if you tune into that possibility.
Well, and in contrast, Milne is just, you know, it's boring and dry. It's like a grid, the 100-acre wood, you know, measured out. I can see what how much an acre goes for, you know.
And everyone lives under a name.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that's domestication per se. You name you.
That's right, right. That's the original Christian narrative, right?
Exactly.
And the beginning was the word.
And in Tove Jansson, I mean, what I find also so hopeful is that it's not simply like a beautiful tale of how life is in the wilderness. Because they encounter civilization, and I mean, the book is kind of ontologically, I mean, its genesis is rooted in war. So obviously she's very realistic. And but she offers in such creative ways, like she covers all the ways of resistance, all the ways of how you can overcome civilization very creatively, very playfully, and sometimes quite quite straightforwardly.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh,
yet
yeah.
Always poetically, you know.
Well, I think that's a marvelous way to, that's a good place to stress. We have to kind of move on, and this is one of those times I really wish we had 2 hours instead of 1 hour. Thanks so much for calling, Layla.
Thank you so much.
I hope this is the success it already is. Beautiful book.
Thank you both, and hopefully till soon.
Yeah, take care.
Take care.
Okay. Bye-bye,
Kat. Bye-bye.
Wow, that was great. That covered a lot. It's such an amazing book.
It, you know, I really do think it's a very, very good book, very provocative, and especially people who are in contact with kids, you know. I know personally, I was totally unfamiliar with the Moomin Valley stories, and I plan to keep them around the house for my grandkids. And
wow.
So, yeah, Children's Literature, Domestication, and Social Foundation, Narratives of Civilization and Wilderness by Layla Abdel Rahim.
Brand new from Routledge. Okay, I think we'll take the break and come back around with a whole lot of stuff.
And we'll talk fast.
And under the boughs and bough, I'll hold in a snowy shroud. She had no heart so harder, all under the boughs and bough. Feather it fell from skin till threadbare and she grew thin. How were my eyes so blinded? Each feather it fell from skin, and I will hang my head. Hang my head low, and I will hang my head, hang my head low. A gray sky with bitter skin, a rain cloud, rain on me, all out behind horizon. Oh, a gray sky of bitter skin, and I will hang my head. Hang my head low, and I will hang my head. Hang my head.
Hello, and we do have another caller. I hope he's still there. It's Ron. Are you there?
Hey, hey, John. Hey, Catherine.
Hey.
Hi.
Yeah, I just want to thank you both for having Layla on the show tonight. She was here in Philadelphia a few years ago, and she gave a really great talk at one of the Radical Spaces. Really generated a lot of interesting conversation.
Oh.
I think her perspective is just so unique and important for me, especially trying to make sense of everything going on and with the racist violence that we're facing. And we've talked a few times on my own podcast about like Trayvon Martin and other things of that nature and how her analysis kind of relates to that. And it's really giving me such a different perspective, and it's kind of hard to get people to understand a little bit because people are so focused on the actual events that are happening right now, but to get people to see that it all fits into this narrative of, like, she talks about domination and sort of people being brainwashed into, like, accepting this hierarchy that we live under, like a racial hierarchy, a social hierarchy. This is ingrained in people from the time that they're little kids, basically. And so I think it's really important that people read her books and just try to absorb that knowledge, because it's really, really important. And yeah, one other thing, because I know you guys are pressed for time, I had a quick question about something that I'm sure you probably heard of already. There was this article that came out on Jacobin a few weeks ago called The Anthropocene Myth. Did you guys talk about this already on the show? Because I don't want to be redundant.
I'm vaguely aware of the Anthropocene myth, but not of any texts or books and I didn't see the article you're talking about.
Right. Basically, it's just it's kind of a short article on Jacobin, and it says that blaming all of humanity for climate change lets capitalism off the hook. And basically, they're saying that it's all capitalism's fault. We can't look at it from like a civilization perspective, We just have to look at it from the perspective of it's the mechanisms of capitalism that are causing the climate crisis. They're causing all the destruction of ecosystems, blah, blah, blah. And I was just wondering what you guys thought of that. And do you agree with that or disagree? Or how do you think that fits into like an antisive framework?
Right off, I would say, I always think it's kind of a good sign when authorities are saying, you know, oh, no, it's, you know, don't be confused. It's not civilization. It's, you know, capitalism. And come on, let's stick with the capitalism. Let's, you know, elect a new party or, you know, create a new nation state or something. So, you know, I do kind of think it's always good to read between the lines or something that there is a growing recognition that the problem is not, that if you frame the problem, and as you say, Layla does it beautifully, there's a different way of looking and thinking about the mess we're in. And that helps find answers. It's not, you know, I think the... You don't become an egoist or a nihilist. It's a sense of community. It's a sense of mutual cooperation. But it's a way of how you see what is the problem. How have we gone astray? How did we get where we are today? And like I said, the great deniers, when they come out fighting, swinging, saying, you know, oh, don't look there. Don't look at the man behind the curtain. It's not civilization. It's capitalism. That's almost a good sign.
Yeah, I think so. And it's a false either or, too, isn't it? I mean, you've got to pick one or the other. If it isn't capitalism, then there's an innate flaw. All humans, humans per se, have caused the problem. And it's an historical development. It's not humans per se. It's civilization. It's domestication. That's where the wrong turn was made. And so that they're setting it up as a false thing. If you don't believe it's capitalism, then you must believe that it's just humans. You know, so right. Therefore, what choice do you have? I mean, you know, and of course, the name Jacobin gives it away. It's a leftist point of view, but so
yeah.
You probably, yeah, it's probably something you wouldn't be surprised at hearing from us.
But, not at all. I agree. It's sort of like preaching to the choir, but I just wanted to hear like validation of, I guess, a little bit. But yeah, thanks for taking that question, and yeah, thanks for your show. I really appreciate it.
Thank you,
thanks,
Ron.
For the call.
Be well. We are having some outstanding phone calls tonight, that's for sure. Wow, okay, well, Ron mentioned events, and this is just your unadulterated events, but the usual segment.
As we call it, Action News
Action
with
News.
John.
In Chile, night of April 7th, the administrative offices of the Rio Bueno Meat Company were hit by a delayed incendiary device, heavily damaging the building. And on April 9th, Mexico City, a Ford car dealership, was met with another explosive device. We detonated the explosive at a dealership because we repudiate such harmful, contaminating, and invasive means of transportation as automobiles. Those roaming pieces of metal and plastic deserve to burn or be destroyed like this civilization and system. And then they close by pointing out that there are a lot more targets and there'll be a lot more detonations. On the night of Easter, 12th, 13th of April, three incendiary devices, outskirts of Athens. This was an action in solidarity with the imprisoned hunger strikers, and more on that in a second. And once again, this was an attack on a meat company, poultry company, that is, Peristeri on the outskirts of Athens. And I've seen this more and more. I think it's a very good sign that they're talking about prisons for humans and other animals are equally the enemy. So they're not confined to just animal liberation, but I see in these communiques, it just seems like more and more there's a deepening of the critique and how they see the whole thing. It isn't just a single issue thing. In Leeds, this is a 1 acre plot at the University of Leeds. It was a research site at one point. It's been a site of resistance, kind of interesting. It's been contested since 2011, recently occupied. And the occupiers defended the place on Monday the 13th, foiling an attempted eviction. There are these, we see just some of them a little bit, you know, these different land occupations, defense of liberated pieces of land. Friday the 17th, Ian Gibson. This is a little Nature Strikes Back, which I've been neglecting. A professional hunter for Chifuti Safaris was killed by a bull elephant in the lower Zambezi Valley in Africa. As Gibson and a tracker closed in on the animal, he turned and charged them, snuffing Gibson. And one of the comments was, "Elephant one, scumbag zero." And by the way, the latest on Mauna Kea, the highest peak on the Big Island of Hawaii, or any island of Hawaii for that, they have caused another postponement. This is the second time that that telescope project has been stopped by resistance. One more. So the company plans are put on hold once again. And they're, you know, they're, that's a battle. They're trying to hold them to account. And the authorities are going to see if they get tired and go away. And on this past weekend, speaking of Greece, the 48-day hunger strike of imprisoned fighters was called off after the Greek parliament agreed to many of the demands. The state backed down regarding several new repressive prison policies. And the front, let's see, front page yesterday, Monday, April 20th, front page Wall Street Journal piece, Canada's own pipeline problem. Effort to boost oil exports to Asia runs up against native groups' concerns for environment and culture. And this is just, it's kind of a longish piece, but of course it has to do with native resistance, these encampments and blockade. And it also points out, by the way, they're talking about the Enbridge pipeline, which is one of the bigger east-west ones. And they acknowledge that the majority of all British Columbia residents are opposed to this project and presumably the other oil pipeline projects as they continue to explode here and there on a daily basis. Yeah, okay, that's about it. A quick rundown of some of the action news. And one thing, just a little news thing here, the third issue of Regression, which is a notebook edited and published biannually, communiques of the Suburban Liberation Front, demolish the strip mall in your head. That's the English translation. Some excellent stuff if you come across that. Regression, spelled like regression, only one S. Diffusion of anti-technological criticisms and the defense of wild nature. A defense with violent means that can be undertaken in the present.
Where's that out of?
It doesn't say, but you can find it pretty easily if you go to that, either search Regression or Communiques of the Suburban Liberation Front. I think you can find their, yeah, it's fairly new, either in the original Spanish or not. Yeah, the resistance to industrialism, and there's just, of course, this keeps on growing. Villa Hermoso, Mexico. This is a week ago now. That's southern, the very end, very southernmost part of Mexico. Roughly 500,000 people remain without drinking water for now over a week after a massive spill contaminated rivers in the area. Last Friday, the 17th, a large gas pipeline exploded into a tower of fire near Fresno. Don't have time for all the details. Friday the 17th, also this is also the same day, Friday the 17th, a fracking wastewater injection site in Greeley, Colorado went up in flames, causing several huge explosions. On and on. This is just a daily routine. And obviously a very slight sampling. We have no idea what goes on in other places, mostly. And I love this. This is just another, the industrial madness of it all. A second person has been confirmed dead. This is news today. A day after more than 60 vehicles smashed into one another in dense fog. This is in Wyoming, southeast Wyoming. In fact, the second pileup in Southeast Wyoming in less than a week. And there are all these, you know, 100 cars just ram into each other. I mean, just it's just the madness, like the fiery chain reaction crash. Yeah, that's another little everyday
lunacy. It's the madness.
Lunacy.
But let's go invest in smart cars that will drive us around, you know, and trust in them.
We can't avoid the most obvious problems, like just driving into people and killing yourself, so I guess so.
Well, let me throw in some of the, I like to go on the kind of health and science side. So Listeria prompts a new wave of recalls. It's among the most dangerous foodborne illnesses. Linked to 3 deaths and 5 illnesses in Texas. Interesting on the Listeria is what a diverse little organism. It can go into frozen food. Bluebell expanded in recall to include banana pudding, butter crunch, mint chocolate chip cookies, ice cream. It's in hummus. So that's a little deadly with Listeria. Another headlines, New York Times, brought by wild neighbors, a deadly flu attacks turkey flocks. That's resulted in 525,000 birds being euthanized. The virus is being spread by feathers, feet, and feces of wild waterfowl like Canadian geese. Virus most likely infiltrated, you know, it's a migrant influenza.
And to update that, today, 5.3 million chickens are going to be destroyed in Iowa as the bird flu thing, the outbreak spreads and deepens.
Yeah, we build them and we destroy them. And then always going on with the Ebola, the ups and downs that you can follow in daily newspaper. I'm happy to say Pulitzer Prize was given to a Daniel Barahulak for his photograph of the West Africa aid workers, humane and humanitarian aid workers, fully suited in yellow protective gear, carrying a sick 6-year-old victim of the virus like a piece of garbage across a blue background. And the stories go on. They're so trying to be so prepared for the Ebola outbreak and the changes that the virus is going through and experimental vaccines to use with it. I had some statistics here if I could find them, but basically it was a comparison of the deaths from Ebola to date as opposed to rabies.
Oh, yeah.
And kind of fascinating to look at the two because the Ebola deaths are pretty minimal, and there's also a reason they're beginning to see in the research that really it isn't that foreign and unique and exotic a virus. Antibodies are being found in human beings from decades ago. So the trajectory of Ebola to me seems to be very similar to the HIV, where it's a virus, it's nature strikes back. Viruses are entering and replacing the threat and the fear and the measures of civilization to control disease. In a similar to what we saw with bacteria, and science is losing the battle.
And by the way, it was announced Friday that there are 24 new HIV cases in Indiana, 130 so far. So you were discussing that the connection between AIDS and Ebola, and that we need not go back into that. But I thought that was
I think that'll be an ongoing for people to watch. I mean, just watch the reporting, watch the discoveries on this, and anyone who's been around from the onset of HIV, you can't not see the similarities. And they're both described as new viruses. There's great fear associated with them. There's racism. There was homophobia, you know, I mean, it's just germs in the old days just didn't have these qualities.
Yeah, mass society is more vulnerable, and of course the tech solution is failing. And speaking of racism, I think many people would be aware of the latest killing of an unarmed black person, this one in Baltimore, just a few days ago. And this is not the quadrupedal pig, but the bipedal pig. Once again, they picked up this guy, threw him in a police van, broke his neck. His spine was 80% severed. And, of course, the first response was, gee, how did that happen? Maybe he had broken his neck beforehand or something. Now that's being exploded. And I thought the contrast with this, there's another story that got a lot of coverage. On Sunday in Ohio, a man came toward a cop telling the cop to shoot him. The cop backed up and was soon joined by other cops. The guy surrendered. And so apparently it's big news when a cop doesn't gun down an unarmed individual. Of course, this guy was white. So, gee, figure that out. It's just, along with the daily murders, then they blow up this one. The guy was, he was about to be arrested on serious charges, and he apparently got suicidal and wanted the guy to shoot him, and it shows the cop backing up. So now, how wonderful.
Yeah.
For once, he doesn't just gun the guy down, you know. Tremendous. And, you know, the other shootings, I just can't resist mentioning this kind of thing, which seems to be getting worse, even though it's really still ignored as a topic, as a phenomenon. Five adults were found dead in a North Phoenix home after a shooting Thursday. Suspected dispute about the family's business. One dead, three injured in Palms, L.A. That's near Culver City in L.A. on Thursday, same day. You could hardly keep up with this. Three people were shot and injured Saturday night, the 18th, at a barbecue at Delaware State University. Fortunately, there weren't any fatalities, but there isn't any day that you can't find these outbursts. And that's only one category, of course, of the violence, as we all know.
Well, and let's move to the category of the pharmaceuticals and drug use. Basically, long article about heroin and heroin needs, but bottom line, prescription pain pills were the source of this epidemic, and OxyContin and the pharmaceuticals developed and addicted a huge part of the population. Basically, in the 90s, doctors came to believe that opioid painkillers were virtually non-addictive when used for pain, and they prescribed them freely. I was telling my husband about the required 7-hour educational that every nurse and doctor was required to listen to, and I believe pharmacists, for licensure in the state, and this wasn't just unique to Oregon, that was very much saying, you know, like pain, the major problem, we're not treating our patients' pain and we're not believing their pain, and, you know, just give them the drugs. And now you've got, you know, first, the overdoses are primarily coming from prescribed drugs, and secondly, heroin overdoses are now on the increase again because people can't afford and get the OxyContins and the prescription opioids, so they go to heroin.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, we're not even going to get into the whole techno field, which is always a lovable topic, because we don't really have the time. Oh, and we might have another call here, which... we'll give us less time, but it's always good to have the calls.
Okay, 1 second.
Oh, yes, it is. All right. Wow, yeah, if only we had more time.
I know, we're talking fast, really fast.
We have Dee Dee on the phone.
Dee Dee, hello?
Hi, I have an announcement.
Okay.
Hello?
Yes, yeah. We're listening.
Lay it on us.
Okay, so I visited this really interesting guy in Southern Oregon this weekend, Orville Camp, Orville and Mary Camp, and they do ecological forestry. But why I'm calling in is he's also writing a book, and he's very into an anti-civilization critique, but his background is ecological forestry, and he's working on a book, and he kind of needs an editor. He could use an editor, like whatever works. And I love books, so I would love to read this book. But if anybody's, I don't actually have any contact info for him because he's out in the woods. But if anybody's interested in trying to contact this guy, Orville Camp, Orville and Mary Camp, Eco Street, Josephine County, Southern Oregon.
How do you spell that last name?
I would love to read this book, so that's the announcement.
But you're not going to edit it, is it? Do we have that right?
Well, you know, I'm maybe, if I have to.
Oh, there you go.
If I have to do it, I'll do it.
I bet you could do it. And what was, can you give that last name again, please? Did you say Camp?
Camp, yeah, C-A-M-P.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, Southern Oregon. There's some cool people down there.
There are, yeah.
Oh, great news. Gee, that's looking forward to that. So he's a little shaky with the fine points of editing kind of thing?
Well, you know, he's not like me or you, who just really loves books and loves to read, and the written word is the material. Like, he's great with fixing stuff. I went down and saw this ecological forestry. He can do that really well, but, you know, he's just trying to get some ideas down. He's got a lot of ideas, but... The wording, you know, work with the wording.
I hope somebody's listening.
And I mean, he didn't like specifically ask for it, but he could definitely use it, and he's a definitely whatever works kind of philosophy guy. Yeah.
Okay, great. Thanks for letting us know. Spread the word.
Okay, love the show. Bye.
Thank you.
Thanks
for calling. Whoa, we're not out of gas.
I love that. He's not like you.
Or me.
Yeah.
Yeah,
no, this is wonderful.
who's not as dull and boring as you are. But no, I hope somebody down there, you know, there's cool people down there. Maybe they would love to help them out.
There's some rotten people down there, too.
Yes, there are.
Yeah, well,
rotten
with
people.
The technology, anybody could help him out, right? You could just send it.
Don't have to be there.
Yeah, yeah. Editing
can
be done.
The camps, yeah. Cool.
All right. Well, we covered so much.
We did.
Covered lots of turf.
We raced along. And now we're done. And
we're going to listen to what?
Oh, we got some Zep. We got some Led Zep to go out.
Yeah. Well, that sounds
good.
Give
Chris a bunch of time to come in. And yeah. Thanks again, Catherine. I'm looking forward to next month.
Okay. Sounds good. Always a pleasure.
A song.